welcome to the North Oakland Double Speaker Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Dan, and I'm an alcoholic and a secretary. Now is a good time to turn off your cell phones. Please join me in opening the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help each other to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
I would now like to introduce our 10-minute speaker, Dave.
I'm Dave. I'm a drunk.
Hi, Dave.
Welcome to everyone that's new or fairly new, our visitors. Glad you're here. I can just tell you this program saved my life. I did follow a few simple suggestions, and I got an amazing life today, not to brag. Man, this Monday, if I don't take a drink, I'll have 4 years. That's a big deal for an alcoholic like myself. You know, I got a home group, Friday night candlelights in Pinole, 8 o'clock. Fire. Come check us out. It is fire. you know, I got a sponsor. I've worked the step a number of times with him as well as with sponsees. And I just try to do this deal, man, and keep getting what I'm getting. I'm nervous as all hell. I talk to God in the bathroom. I don't care how dirty the bathroom is, wherever I go, I got to talk to God. I get on my knees and just pray that I can speak through God and help at least one of you. And I hope I do that tonight. Anyways, man, I grew up in El Sobrante.
Well, it's off number one.
Whoa! I grew up in El Sobrante, man. My mom's like the greatest person in the world. I had a brother, my dad, who wasn't that great. He liked to put his hands on me, my brother, and my mom. He drank like I drank. It's not the reason I'm an alcoholic. It's just to give you an idea of kind of how I grew up. I had my first drink in junior high. It was this girl's family was going out of town, and she had her cousin or uncle or something buy like 20 40s of Mickey's and like two handles of tequila, and we got down, man. There's about 20 of us teenagers, and we got down, and I passed out. There was, for some reason, there was no coffee table in the living room, but I passed out right where a coffee table would be, right from the couch. And I came to, I don't know, an hour or two later, and there's throw up everywhere. There was the little red cups on my back. They were like using me for a coffee table. But when I got up, man, there was still booze, and the party was still going. And I would think like a normal kid would like go home or call his mom or something in a situation like that. But again, there was still booze, and the party was still going, and I kept going. And I love telling this story because that night I got late. I lost my virginity that night. And I don't even think I washed my face. So that poor girl, you know. The throw up going on. It was bad, man. But when something like that happens, it's like, dude, I'm going to do this as often as I can, right? I got laid. This is amazing. And that's what I did. I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun, and then the consequences started happening. I went to Byron's Boys Ranch. I started going to county jail, graduated to prison. And I remember I got out of prison the first time, And along this journey, I found other forms of alcohol. And got out of prison the first time, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to do this. And I was like 23, and I'd never drank at a bar. So I'm like, I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to drink. And my brother picked me up, and while I was locked up, he got a job as a bartender at this hole in the wall in El Sobrano called the Capri. And he took me to work with him that night, and he gave me a bunch of drinks. And there was like these cougars and these barflies. You know, I'm fresh out of the pen, I'm feeling good. And it's kind of like the first drinking story, you know, getting laid and stuff. And I fell in love with the whole bar scene, man. It was tight. It was a lot of fun, but it didn't last long. 3 months, I made it 3 months drinking, and I got in a high, got kicked out of Green Lantern and Pinole, got in a high-speed chase, went back to prison for a couple of years. Got out again, and I'm like, well, I'm just going to drink, but I won't drink and drive. And that didn't last long. You know, I was back in prison for a few years this time. And I got out, and it was just... I just, along this journey, I couldn't put two and two together. It was always, I shouldn't have been hanging out with her, shouldn't have been hanging out with him, should have made a left instead of a right, you know, or whatever the case may be, right? And I just couldn't put two and two together that booze was my problem. And so I got out of my third prison term, and I'm on this binge. I'm about 9 months into it, and I'm doing other forms of booze, and I found myself at my buddy's house, drunk and whatever, drinking Four Loko. You guys know about that? I quit drinking like right after the whole Four Loko scene. 211, man, Four Loko, 211, dude, like, I don't know, man. I had this moment of clarity, and I just broke down crying. I was thinking about my life and like what it's been like and where it's headed, and I was thinking about people that I grew up with, like how they have this, it looks like a nice life, like they're married with kids and like a house, like what normal people do, and like I wanted that, man, and I just broke down crying, and I made a commitment to go to my parole officer the next day and ask for a program, and I did that. He got me into the Fruso House in Richmond. And so on March 2nd, 2011, it was the day I was checking in. I was supposed to be there at 1. I don't think I woke up until about 1. And I had the shakes, and I got into my brother's stash. And I had 2 glasses of Seagram 7, and that's the last time I ever put anything in my body, any booze or anything. And along the way, my brother picked up habits and was boozing a lot, but he kept it together for the most part. And anyways, I was in Furuso, and I still have reservations. Like, through this program, I'm going to learn how to drink on the weekends, or I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to learn how to drink a beer after work. And that was my goal, man. But I was hearing stuff in those meetings. I was hearing things, and I was relating. And about 2 months into it, I got a phone call. My brother had died. He had OD on booze and pills. He was 30 years old. And those reservations were replaced with like a willingness to do this deal. And that's what I did, man. I went down, I went on a pass to be with my mom. And the next day, I went to the El Sobrano Fellowship, which was a block from my house. I'm very fortunate for that because I had an EBT card. That was all I had. Me and my sponsor were just talking about that the other day. That's all I had, was a freaking EBT card. Sorry, I'm getting a little emotional. You know, I went down there and I saw my sponsor in the parking lot. And he wasn't my sponsor, and I'd known him before. We've been to different prisons together. We've been in the same prisons together. We drank on the side trail in Rodeo together. And I saw him down there. And he gave me a hug. And I'm running out of time. Anyways, I picked him up as a sponsor, man, and we just dove into this thing. I got into the book. He taught me about being a service, and I worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because of that, I've had a spiritual awakening, and I'm a different person today. I have that change in the attitude. I like to hold the door open for people. I I like to think of others. I'm alcoholic. I'm selfish, but through these steps and doing this deal, I just try to remind myself to think of others, put other people first, put you guys first, and just work with guys, and just be a service to AA because it saved my life, man. And I have a great life because of that today. This is where it's at, and kind of drawing a blank, but I'm like stressing because he's strict. Yeah, man, I don't know. I just constantly want to give back to Alcoholics Anonymous and keep getting what I've been getting. Man, I've been able to mend a relationship with my mother, who I used to come home and she would be crying in the middle of the night and I didn't give a shit. I just come by with a bunch of stolen shit, and I got to mend that relationship. I got a great career today. I got great friends. AA has literally saved my life, man. I'm super grateful, and I just do this deal. It sounds like a lot, man, but I just got a sponsor. I work the steps. I be of service where I can. I be of service at my home group, and I don't say no to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I reach my hand out to new guys. And I'm constantly, I don't have a sponsor right now, so if anyone's looking for one, I just want to give back, man, because so much has been given to me. And I feel like I'm really pushing it. I just really hope I said something that hope maybe gave someone some hope. Again, AA is the shit, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Thank you.
Right on, bro. Perfect. And now we're gonna hear from Edna.
Hi, family. I'm Edna. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Yeah.
Wow, this is a big deal. Oh, yes. I need to say, I'm just happy to be here. It's the first time I've been here and the first time I've been in a meeting where you guys are getting evicted the same day. What kind of message is that? I need to say, my sobriety birthday is January 2nd, 1994. I haven't seen fit to have a drink or a drug. And I like the way they put it. I had alcohol and other things, too. You know, I wasn't just a full alcoholic. And many of us that come in, like I've come in, are not just fully alcoholic. So if you have a problem with alcohol and other substances, we learn how to speak in an AA meeting, in a general way. Even though my story has other parts of other chemicals and other lies and cheats and all those things that we do, getting drunk and loaded and all that. But I found out, I'm going to start today. And I'm going to go back because I don't have that drunk alarm no more. I just don't. A message has to have depth and weight for the alcoholic that comes in today. And the reason why is because I didn't think I was an alcoholic when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to say that. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous 98 pounds soaking wet. My last high, I went blind. That was my bottom. I had tried many, many ways and many, many antidotes and many, many places that I had went to try to stop on my own. Now, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, they said I could find a God of my own understanding. I was not raised religiously. I wasn't made to go to church. God, I heard of him, and, whatever, what you said of him, and then what it sounded like. And not being an atheist or agnostic, not knowing exactly what that meant, I didn't fit under that category either. However, I'm from a family of 12. I'm the ninth child. I'm raised in East Oakland. And you guys say, whoa, East Oakland wasn't like that. I'm the part of the baby boomers. I'm born in the 50s. 10 of us are stair steps. If you don't know what that means, we're all a year apart. And we all are born in the 50s. Wow. So, consequently, when I was coming up in East Oakland, you didn't see faces. I seen your faces, And I'm mixed, so, I had that problem with fitting in, because I never fitted in. Because people looked at you and like, what are you? And that was my first learning how to be manipulated, because I got tired of asking, what are you? And I didn't understand the question. What do they mean? I'm a girl. My name is Edna. And I didn't know the race thing, because I didn't. You know, when I came up, I was raised in, you know, an area where it was just white Jews and Portuguese. You know, it wasn't blacks in my neighborhood in East Oakland. And I was raised in 72nd, where it was East 14th. It wasn't International Boulevard. And so, coming up, I didn't get the race card until I got in junior high, when the blacks started moving in our neighborhoods and all of that, because my father's half white and Indian and black, so, you know, we fitted in, you know. And so, I didn't know that mixture. My friends were all my friends. I had problems with the black race, you know, more, because they looked at me and they looked how I looked and all that, so I was different. And I hear that story many times, that we come in here and we feel different. And I was, and that abuse thing was in my house. My father was a hope-to-die alcoholic. Drunk, we go get him down the street, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, I went through watching my brother get shot at 9 years old by my father. You know, incest, all that stuff that we go through. But that is not even the reason I found out later on why I got loaded. And it was a lot of different things that I didn't understand. I did not know. I didn't want to be me. Didn't never, ever want to be me. I didn't want to be in my family. So I looked for only children as friends, and that's what I had, only children friends. If they had more than one in their family, I was not their friend. I had enough. We were in a three-bedroom house, one bathroom. We shared beds. We had to share a bathtub. It was always crowded. And even today, you know, I suffer from claustrophobia. And it's funny, I'm in a big meeting that doesn't bother me. And hey, I can be around you guys and I'm comfortable. But in certain places I can't. I feel like I'm backed up against the wall. You know, and I go into this thing, you know. So however, I'll start with today. I thank Elena for asking me to come speak. You know, I sponsor Elena. She said, hey, it's a big meeting, come on down. And I get a text at 5:30, I'm really sick. And I'm not. I'm like, so thank you for coming to share for me. And then I thought about it, I ain't come to share for her. and so I said, okay, get better, you know, that's fine. And when the hand of AA reaches out, because they grabbed hold of me, because I was in trouble. I was the alcoholic that had reservations too. And one of the things that I had was that, oh, you alcoholic wasn't taking away my drink. You can take away the other stuff, because I was through with it. Tore me up. 98 pounds I came in. I took the scale now, but 98 pounds. And I came in into my 30s. Tomorrow's my natal birthday. I'll be 57 years old. And then I say this is that, you know, I'm a great grandmother as of Thanksgiving. I have a nice little three-month-year-old little girl. I have three granddaughters. 19, 14, and 8. I have two daughters, 39 and 32. Now, they were 16 and 10 when I came in. And so I have all nothing but girls. And I said, God, we're going to have a conversation with that one. They're a tall woman. And I haven't drank. I need to say that. I haven't drank, you know, with that. But I say this is that no matter what, because see, I got loaded, rain, sunshine, it didn't matter. I could be sick getting out of the hospital. You know what? Jail is a yet for me. But at the institution I met was the hospitals. I almost lost my kidneys in 1986, and they didn't tell me to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to say that. They gave me fertilizers, you know. And so that's what they did. And so I could go to work on tranquilizers. You know, and I had a job, and I worked. I went to school. I was a straight-A student. Don't know how, but I was. And I made it through, and I've gotten wonderful jobs, and I've done all that. I was married twice before I got into AA. I'm married twice when I went to AA. Need to say now, I'm going on my fourth divorce. My third one died before it was final. And I say that. But just starting in the day is that what for me is, after coming into AA for 3 or 4 months, I did drink again. You know, I was an alcoholic that liked the glitter and the glamour and the crystal glass. You can thump and hear that little bell. And at the end, I was hearing sirens and shit. So, what I say that is that I was over in San Francisco. It was before New Year's. I had met this stockbroker because I was into that kind of stuff. You know, a dressed up garbage can. That's what I was when I got there. And, you know, I could dress it up. The inside, I was rotten. I was dead. They probably just gonna cut all the insides out of me because they were dead. And so, you know, I drank this half a glass of wine, and I had come into AA, and like Dave, I had heard some stuff. And there were some scary stories around here, too, that I hadn't done. But what stood out for me was somebody said that yak meant you were eligible, too. And I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? And, you know, and I said, if I continue on this path, a lot of the stories that I was hearing, you know, I could be eligible. Why had none of these things happened to me? Because I did some of the things, you know, that Dave probably did and went to prison for, and I didn't go to prison. So I'm like, whew, I'm slick, right? No. I stayed long enough to find out that people that stayed and got sober, it was easier to stay sober than to get sober. So I was looking at that. So when I drank that half a glass of wine and smoked that joint, I did, and I couldn't raise my hand for 30 days, I knew I was in trouble. So it was this lady, beautiful, blonde, I loved her. And I went to her, I'd be like a little kid, I pulled on her jacket, and I said, can I talk to you for a minute? I said, do I have to tell these people that I drank again? Because I looked in that blue book of yours, and I mean, that's how I read the book, big one. It don't say nowhere in it that I got to raise my hand for 30 days. That's the kind I thought. So my sponsor loved me, and I've had her for almost 22 years now, and she just looks at me now, and so we sponsor each other now, pretty much. She has just a couple of years more than me, and now she calls me. Well, she told me no, but then she grabbed hold. She said, I'm going to sponsor you. I didn't even ask you. She said, I'm going to sponsor you. So she's my grand sponsor. And then it's funny how we, now I can go anywhere in the world and I see you guys. I know you. It's like, it don't matter. I'm like, oh, golly, thank God. I can talk to somebody, you know, besides the normies, you know. And went through the steps in my first 6 months, you know, and people started asking me to sponsor them, and I'm like saying, no, I can't sponsor you, I don't have enough time and all that. And what I found out is once you work these steps, you can work a step if you work the step with somebody else. So don't leave somebody out the door, you know, hanging, because the blood becomes on your hands. So if somebody reaches out and say, hey, can you help me? That's an insurance policy today. That's my insurance policy. That's why I'm here today. I say this is that my mother's in the hospital. She got discharged yesterday, back in the hospital this morning. You know, it's been back and forth. They didn't give her the medicine. She's bleeding internally. Her blood pressure was a question mark over 17. I get off of work, and what that means is that, you know, my mother was getting ready to leave here. And so I say this, and people say, oh, well, why are you here? Why are you at work? I said, because of the responsibility is what I can't transmit something I haven't got. So I can use that excuse to get off work and run to the hospital and sit for 2.5 hours that they won't even let me back to see her because they're working on her. Or I can go ahead and do my job and still do there and be in prayer, you know. And then when God is ready for me to do something, he'll open the door and make the path. And he's done that since I've been in AA. I have been a service junkie from the very beginning. And my fellowship is the in-between fellowship. And they had couches and they used to smoke in there. Half the room was non-smoking. Half was smoking. And it was a room like this. So you can tell the smokers went over to the non-smoking. And you know, and I washed coffee cups. I swept. And I did all those things. But what I heard was when I did drink again, and I was really scared to death, you guys. I really was. I said, I'm not going to make it. I said, you know, if I don't think that I'm an alcoholic, I had no idea what an alcoholic was. For this alcoholic, for me, I had to go to beginner's meeting to find out even if I belonged here. It wasn't the fact that I knew that I almost died of alcohol. I needed to find the information what that means. I had no idea that alcoholism was a disease. That opened my eyes. I can say to you now with all the fervor, you know, in my heart today, that I have a disease. And it's cutting, baffling, and powerful. One shot, we all shot. I've been in long enough, and I'm not talking about around this program. I have been in this program, and I have watched people die. I have watched people go to prison. I have watched people come across my window that I know that's in this program because I work in the field where we come. Alcoholism and drugs takes us. Jails, institutions, and death. I don't even ask why, you know, God put me there, because he knows that I'm a service junkie. And that wherever that there's a hope and there's help for us, that we do belong, that we are somebody, and that we do deserve the help. And I know a lot of in this room said that a lot of the things that we have done in our alcoholism or in our drug addiction, that we don't deserve the life we have today. That's a lie. We do. We are somebody. We have covered a road and a past that the normal people that have never picked up a drink have ever covered. That's where we are strong. That's why we belong. That's why today that you see people, and I don't even judge people today, that, you know, I've been a fellowship that's been around for 56 years. And I tell you now, the membership has driven down. And people say, oh, nobody's coming. The old timers are all that. Hell no. The old timers are not responsible for the newcomers. You newcomers need to keep these doors open for the newcomers that's coming on after you. Because they tell us that we go home and we bring this to our families that have this problem that never get to go to Alcoholics Anonymous or a drug program. Because I was one of them alcoholics that didn't get to do that. When I was coming up, it was Riley Hills. That's what I heard, the Betty Ford Clinic. Now you got options and you got all these other places, you know, that I never heard of. I couldn't understand, you know. Couldn't people see my problem? No, they couldn't. I had to see it. In other words, if I didn't want this, guess what? No matter what you told me, what alcohol would do, and if I didn't want this, I'd still be getting loaded. I had to come here and want this for myself, not for my children, not for no job, not for no man, baby, none of that. I had to start with me. When I started changing, everything around started changing. Ain't that something? So my mother's in the hospital, and I have 10 brothers and sisters that are still living. And of course, I moved to one of the Brooklyn channels. And so, you know, I get caught. Oh, yeah, you think you something because you don't drink no more and all, and ain't got the alcohol problem. You know, you go in and I just look at them. Because that's where, you know, when we come in a long time, they call us the bleeding deacons. I know you guys heard about the bleeding deacons. They talk about, oh, they just do it my way. And then next week you see them drunk. Then you get the quiet voice of AA. They don't say much. They come to meetings like, you know, Dan sit here in the secretary of meeting and come. And then the ones that they maybe don't have the courage to do what I'm doing today. They sit in a meeting that you need to cover a seat. That's a service. You guys don't even know that. That's a service. Because if no one's here to hear the message, then no one's going to get the message. I found that out today. You know, life is strange. It is. I say that is because I can cry, you know, for the joy of what's happened. Less is more. And I say that is because even in my addiction, I've had a lot of money. I've had a lot of material things and all that stuff. And I was a lonely woman. I remember standing by the refrigerator. I was up in by the Mormon Temple. I had this big old house, you know, bars, you know, quick bars, two fireplaces. I'm the only one in the house. And I'm getting loaded. And I remember I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I said, well, you know, let me get this Bible. You know, they talk about reading. I had one that had my name, but it kept waking me up with this scripture. I don't know, but it tells me where the scripture is. And I fought it in my sleep. And what I did was I finally got up because it was just bugging me. I got up and I opened it up and I didn't read it. I just wrote it in the front of the book, what it said, and I closed it. It's a funny thing. 8 years later, I found that Bible and I read that scripture. And I didn't know, I had no idea when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous about the Serenity Prayer. And when I read that, and it talked about wisdom comes with the defense of those that see the sun. And I'm like, what does that mean? And when I read the Serenity Prayer, God grant me the serenity to accept the things that I could not change. That's what kept me just loaded. It just kept me loaded. But then when I got this courage to say something's wrong, I remember laying in that bed blind and saying, God, please help me stop. Remember for really the first time or the other, don't know who this God is, but saying, God, please help me stop. And please, you fill in the blanks. Because the educational, you know us, the variety of educational people. Oh, we think we know a lot, right? I'm in this room too. I need to say that. For the ones that don't have no education, you in this room too, right? Even with my smarts, I was killing myself. I was killing myself and giving people permission. I was spending all my money. Staying up nights, you know, not sleeping, and all those things that we do, and not being fully responsible, going in the bathroom on my job, you know, going to sleep, because I drink in the morning, I drink at lunchtime, I drink when I get off, and then when Bart started running, I was scared to go through the tube, because I was working over in the city, and I'd end up through the tube, and I'm supposed to get off at Fruitvale, and I'd be at the end of the line at Fremont, you know, and I didn't know what a blackout was, but I've had many of them. I can't say until you guys talked about them. I said, yeah, I remember waking up and not remembering how the hell I got places. or driving my car. Oh, thank God I didn't kill anybody. You know, and I never had a DUI. And I hear the stories in here, and I'm like, you guys, you know, I'm sorry, you're lucky to get caught. You know, I was saying, golly. But God's seen another path for different people. I guess for me is that if people, everybody got DUIs, and somebody came in a room like me and didn't, then I would say, oh, I got to wait till I get a DUI. So somebody in this room has never had a DUI. Somebody in this room has never went to prison. Somebody in this room has never, you know, been in the hospital. But we touch each and everyone's heart. Something. It ain't about the difference. It's the similarities. It don't matter how we look or how we got here. It doesn't. Today I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope. That's all. I'm not here to transmit something that I haven't got. I'm not here to tell you, you know, how to make a marriage work, because I haven't made four of them work. And I don't point the finger at the person that I'm with. I look at me. And what helps me is that I have a book. No whole bar. Barleycorn.
Barleycorn says it out. I tell you, I'm burning. AA's burning me. You know, they used to call me a big book thumper. I'm not such a big book thumper anymore. But I read it inside now because I had to prove you AA's wrong when you say stuff in the meeting. I'm like, they don't say that. They don't do that. You know? But one of the things in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that I did read, because I didn't read the first 164 pages right away, I read Freedom from Bondage. And I say that because I was in a self-made prison and didn't know it. And so when I heard the prison stories of people being locked up in the box, institutionalized, and all of those things that they say we do, I was in a self-made prison. And I remember as a kid, you know, I'm an artist. I love it. You know, and it came back to me, you know, since I've been sober. So I paint and do crafty stuff. That's my outlet. You know, I love it. I can just do it all day, all night. But anyway, I say that as a child, I used to put a blanket over the kitchen table and go under and get the newspaper and cut out paper dolls. Because I'm from a big family, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of money, so I made my doll clothes, you know. My grandfather was a longshoreman, so he would bring little dolls there, and I kept them in a shoebox, and my brothers and them would take them and do body parts and bury them in the backyard, like that. And so I was a rageaholic when I got here, too. I need to say that I was really angry, you know what I'm saying? And towards the end, I would have dreams of homicide and, you know, stuff like that. And not killing myself, but killing others. And it scared me, you know, because it was real. I mean, it become real. Sirens and shootouts. And I don't know where all, but this was it coming out of me. I don't watch those kind of movies, you know. So I know something was going on evil inside of me, I was feeling like. And but, you know, the strange thing about all of that is that once we clean house, and trust the God, I'm sorry, of my understanding. It might not be the same God. It's not a light bulb, it's not a doorknob. But I have a God of my understanding that understands me on my lows, my highs, all of those things when I don't want to be bothered with nobody, including God. And sometimes I don't. I go in my dream world and I do my own thing and I'm not hurting anybody. But sometimes I check in with me. And on the 10th step, it talks about those inventories, those spot check inventories. That's how I survive. That's how I survived these 21 years. When I go through and I get all tied up and things ain't going right and then I get judgmental. But I have this little thing in me of retaliation. So you step on my toes. And I don't do it viciously anymore. You know, I'm a mental person. But if you step on my toes and you hurt me, you know, my first thing is not to hurt you back, but to make you hurt your own self. So there's little things like that I still work on. I have to, when I'm feeling like I want to do that, like that person or supervisor tried to do all that power trip on me, I wait. I wait in the cut. I wait till everybody calls in. Because I'm responsible today. I'm the one that I come to work. I do up and above my job. And then there's people that don't come to work. And I know they don't come to work. And I know when they don't come to work. And you know, supervisor gets to talking, you know, that shit they talk. I got time on the books too. And then, you know, I'm covered, right?
Because if I call in and everybody else calls in, they can't say nothing to me because that becomes a work and it doesn't work because up and above, so they're going to look at everybody else. That's the kind of retaliation should I do today. And so, but that's retaliation. And I have to make amends later, you know, and I try not to make amends because I do not like to make them. I really, really don't, you know. So, I keep coming back and the steps and sponsorship, you know, I've sponsored a lot of women in this program. Thank God, you know, I'm able to be a sponsor. Some people are not. I thought I was one of those ones. I wasn't going to have time and all of that, but I didn't have any business when I came in here, so I might as well do that. I was the alcoholic that, you know, laid my own self off so I could take off for a year to take care of myself. I got, you know, unemployment, you know, for the first 6 months it ran out. You know, I played that game. I did some consulting stuff and I could collect unemployment. And then I didn't want to do that anymore. You know, I did the financial district and all the places that you get to dress up and look like a Barbie doll and all that stuff. And in AA, what happened was for me is that God, I said, I didn't want that life. I had to get self-supporting through my own contributions because I wasn't. My money was my money. I didn't pay bills with my money. Hell no. I had other things to do, you know. By then, you know, I have two daughters. You know, I had my first daughter at 19, my next one at 26. You know, and fortunately, the daddies were financially able to take care of the children. You know what I'm saying? Even financially, not emotionally. And I wasn't emotionally either. I didn't have emotion in my body. But, you know, I seemed fit to be able to give them the material things. And I thought that was raising your kids. And, of course, later on, you know, with me, I find that God has forgiven me. Truly have. My children's choices today because they're grown and now they have children. And I get to sit back and watch them with their children, their girls. That's my retaliation. I look back and I think about that. You know, a 19-year-old just had a baby, and she didn't do some stuff. And she's been to jail, and the baby's 3 months. And, you know, of course, I can get her out, or I don't. And then okay, give you one chance, I'll do it. 2 weeks later, you do it again, huh? You can sit your ass again. Because my birthday's tomorrow, I'll be 57, I want to go give me a massage, and I don't see that in my budget, you know, so that's your choice, you know, and I've learned to do that. Before, I would think that I've had to fix it because of my past, of what I didn't do, so now I do it for my grandchildren, you know, my daughter, you know, she's having a hard time, but she drinks, you know, and she sees me, and then she tells me she don't want to drink no more. I do not try to sponsor my children. I do not try to sponsor my brothers and sisters. I don't. But I will bring them literature. I brought them all literature. I'll take them to a meeting if they want to go. But if they don't want this, I really personally don't even want to see them in the same meetings I want to be in. But I'm just saying, I don't want that. You know, I've learned it's just better to kind of stay out of that realm, you know, of trying to help your family in that kind of way. The only way I can help my family is I walk this program. And they know. If anybody else knows, because I got loaded with my brothers and sisters. Not too much of the outside people, but with my brothers and sisters. So they know what it was like to me. And so they get to see firsthand. So I know when I come around and they get loaded, it fucks up their drinking and their high. Sometimes I stay and sometimes I don't. You know, sometimes they go, you know, my mother. And I'm a caretaker for my mother. And I've just learned to let go of some of that. Because it's been really hard for me. It's been really, really hard for me. Like I said, I just left a marriage in December. My mother is sick. I could have very well moved back with my mom. But I got 8 brothers and sisters that are crazy as hell. And that's central. They get to come to where my mom is. And it affects my sobriety. You know, they still smoking drugs and all that. I work in law enforcement, so I can't go to work smelling like crack. And then, of course, if I raise hell, my mother's a cult. Well, and then, you know, I said, I do know, Mom. That's why I can say it, you know. But I can't live with you, and I can't be there for you. So I have to find other ways that I can be there for her, you know. And that's been my hardest thing. It's not a struggle anymore, but she gets mad at me. And I see her pain because I really believe I'm named after my mom. Even though I'm not her first daughter, I'm the second baby girl. I have 5 sisters older, you know. And she looks at me, I can look through her and I can feel her. And it just like grabs me, that soulmate thing. And I didn't go back to the hospital today because I didn't need to go back to the hospital today. My sister is here from Las Vegas and her husband. And they came to visit my mom, but she made other plans because it's his birthday today. And I thought you were going to come visit mom. Well, and she's in the hospital, and usually Edna just goes. I said, okay, I'll see you guys later. You've got to take care of Tag. You're tagged.
Yeah.
And I don't have to do everything. And I need to say that, you know, to you alcoholics. You don't have to do everything. God has forgiven us. If you are here today and you're sober today, He has something else for you. It's not our plan. We can plan, but not the outcome. You know what I'm saying? I plan to go to Napa tomorrow. But, you know, I'm not going tomorrow. I'm just going to wait till tomorrow and see what's unfold. It's okay. It's fine. I can get a massage here, you know, if I want a massage. You know, and I still want to do that. I'm going to do that for myself. But, you know, the other thing is that, you know, if no one's told you that they love you today, and I can say that truly because I didn't love myself. I went to an outpatient program and the counselor said, Anna, can you write 20 beautiful things about yourself? And I could not write 20 beautiful things about myself. You know, and I remember not being able to look in the mirror at myself. I can count my ribs, you know, and wanting to die, but not having the courage to kill myself, you know, and God wouldn't take me out either. But I did have a brother, you know, that died with this disease, and I was with him till he took his last breath. So those things I look as being grace, that for the grace of God, there go I, because I've taken so much stuff. And I hear, you know, stories like Dave's brother that maybe didn't do what we did with a little alcohol and pills, and I'm here today. And I know I've done abundant, you know, because I was a binger. And I would, like I told you at the end, I heard sirens, because that's how loaded I got. And I'm still here. My heart beating, you know, arthritis. I hurt, but I've learned not to even show that. I keep on pushing, moving. I think if I be still, that's when it would be ended for me. And I believe just for today that God had me show up today, you know, not to be selfish, not to tell myself that I don't need to come here and speak and share my experience just with hope because my mother's in the hospital. Because I know if I was out getting loaded, I wouldn't be, you know, present. Because I have a sister now that's not present, you know, and she hasn't been in none of the hospitals that my mother's been in the past year, you know. And so I know this. I know this. So I'm here spiritually because this program is mental, physical, and spiritual. So I got to keep my mental state straight because I'm falling to that and how it works with the mental disorder. Because I did meet the hospitals. I cut my wrist at 6 years sober. I ended up at Herrick Hospital. And I met the psychiatrist again, and I met it through my through my life. But that was the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, I had to go on antidepressants for 2 years, and it was like enlightening, because that's something I probably wouldn't have never done, you know. And because I was in so much pain, I would not drink, and I've known people that have jumped off the Kaiser building because of it. They don't want to get loaded, but they just can't hold on. They kill themselves. And I had got to that point, you know, and I wanted to cut out the pain. I didn't want to drink a drug with it, but I want to cut it out, you know. And God seemed fit to give me some mental help. And so I got my mental help. And when I am disconnected, I know what to do. I know what to do. If I have to take medication, I take medication, you know, to put me back together. Because I heard someone say in closing, we had to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't do it. It took you and you and you to put this alcoholic together again. Love you guys. Thank you.